music radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till
it's too late.
The Radio Avenger.
Rick Adams is on.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's me, Rick Adams, with you today, the Saturday program. And, of course, today is November 11th, live, Rick Adams Uncensored, otherwise known as Veterans Day here in America. I have a very special guest coming up with me in just a few moments, and Art from Philly, he returns later in the second hour. But first, I wanted to go through my scriptures, as I always do. In the Gospel of Matthew, we read about in chapter 25 and also in chapter 8, 24, and then references to the Old Covenant about the time when the Lord will come back, the real Messiah will return, taking down the fake and bringing his sword of justice with him. And he's talking about his elect, his first fruits here. And he talks about the time that the servants of the Lord in the house are there having a good time, many of them distracted by the absence of the master. And he, the master, does come back. And he comes, he says, in Matthew 24, verse 50. He says, in a time or an instant, he said, when his servants do not anticipate him. And an hour that they do not expect. And unfortunately, he shall cut off and cut asunder some of them that will be appointed their portion, as he says, with the hypocrites. Those who shall be weeping and those who shall be gnashing their teeth. The hypocrites, of course, is the play actors, the false so-called Jews, the so-called false Israelites, that we refer to today, those who claim to be and are not. Well, in any event, we know that his servants in the house are expected to be prepared at any moment when his master, their master, will return. And how many today, how many today are prepared and prepared waiting and watching the signs of the time worldwide and in Jerusalem particularly? How many are doing their job and teaching the flock and feeding themselves a nourishing meal instead of poison from the garbage pail? How many? Well, I hope many will be doing the right thing, and certainly that is our prayer, and that we will be doing the same thing as watchmen on the wall in these times in which we live, when we are constantly being distracted from what we should be doing, focusing on his coming back and his re-entrance into his home. The master will come, and as servants, let us be prepared. That is my prayer, that is my offering, and my scripture for today. Now, today being Veterans Day in America, I couldn't think of any more precious guest, I think, to bring up on the program than a man whom I certainly came to know, I would say, in the 1989 period and in 1991 and 2, particularly when I was doing a talk show locally in my area, my neck of the woods, as I like to say. And his name is James Bach, and he is quite an author and quite a background from up north in Canada, Toronto, which is where he was born, and comes from a journalistic background, actually. Former journalist and published quite frequently, author of many different essays and different articles and books, including works of nonfiction. But what, of course, piqued my curiosity and my readership was his book, Other Losses, which I believe came out in 89. And that book certainly stirred the passions of people in America, pro and con. Many of the defenders and apologists for General Eisenhower at that time, and even to this day, certainly do not like to resurrect the image that Mr. Bok had actually shown in his book, I think, to be quite resplendent. And the war crimes of the Allies is something that you just don't talk about. You can talk about all of the war crimes in Vietnam and the My Lai massacres and all of these others, but don't bring up the bombing of the Allies and the camps, particularly following World War II from 1945 onward, and even prior to that. So our guest, he's waiting in the wings by phone, is James Bok, author of that and many other books as well. Hello, James. Come on up.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. You're on with me, James. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, good. Do you mind if I call you Jim?
No, that's just fine. And my last name is pronounced Back.
Yes, all right, Back. I pronounce it Bok, but I will pronounce it Back. You're back. You're back with us now. First time. I want to thank you and the interview that you did on Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's radio program shortly, about a month or so ago. That was great. And as I said, Jim, you have quite a background in journalism and a background in writing. And apparently now you have your own website. You offer DVDs. You offer a number of other things, including, I guess, a movie version, if I'm not mistaken, of Other Losses. But before we get into that book and the videos, let me ask you, what in the world, from your background, being in this field of journalism and writing, what piqued your curiosity enough to look into and do the kind of research you did to come up with this monumental work, Other Losses?
Well, my father had fought the Germans in the First World War, and my whole family fought in the Second World War, starting in 1939. And so the war was always a big thing for me growing up. I was born well before the war, but I was not old enough to get into it myself, or I would have been. And I was more interested in the French resistance than I was in the war itself. And I went over to France to write a book about a man named Raoul Laporterie, who had been saving people from the Nazi death camps in 1941 and 2, when after the Germans overran France. And in the course of doing research for that book about the French resistance, I stumbled upon this absolutely incredible story, I thought, of the Americans murdering about 750,000 prisoners during the war, after the war, sorry, and the French joining them to bring the total up to something over 1 million German prisoners deliberately starved to death after the war. That's what got me.
Oh, yes.
Going.
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard that from other sources. Many have come forth with similar stories. It's not kosher. It's not politically correct to say anything positive about Germans or Germany or anything to do with that particular region because of the political correctness and the rulers of the media, the publishing houses, the powerful elite that simply do not wish for any audience to hear history. They are supposed to hear what they say is history, and what's omitted is not permitted. So I think, James, we can definitely agree to that. But as to these camps, when your book first came out and then subsequent to it a couple of years later, I had been on a local radio station doing my show, as I am doing it now, talking about the book. I noticed that people's curiosity were piqued. Some said they were kind of distressed and upset because they had this image of Eisenhower as a general, of being such a great patriot, being such a great American general, and you know, in fighting against tyranny and fighting for liberation and freedom and so forth from the nasty Nazis, you know, that type of thing, that when they heard the story that you told and also began to hear it from others, it wasn't very flattering to him, obviously. And people in America, long after the war, started to learn about some of these real atrocities. But up until that point, when he became president, most of this was like swept under the rug, and they weren't aware of these atrocities. So, you know, it's interesting that you felt an indignation enough to want to research something that wasn't very popular. It wasn't something that, you know, ordinary today you'd expect journalists to do. They just they wouldn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So your motivations must have been more than just what you've stated, just, you know, your family and your service. There must have been something additional there pushing you to do this. Was there?
Well, I think there was, yes. My mother used to get after me always to tell the truth, and I certainly didn't always do that. But she bugged me, and I did think that that was an important thing to do. But I, right from the beginning, I was enchanted by the story. It was such a powerful indictment of the myth of the only good war that I knew that if the book could be done properly, and I did my best to do it right, that it would be a tremendously powerful piece of work. And so it turned out to be. Americans certainly did not want to hear it. And a German once told me, after the book came out over there, and he told me this in about 1995, only a Canadian could have written this book. And I wondered about that, and I thought, well, we don't have any monopoly on world virtue or anything like that. But I saw later that he was quite right, that the English believed that was the only good war because they felt it had to be fought to defend the empire. And the French, the same thing. And the Americans eventually saw it as the only good war, and that they had won it because Eisenhower came over and, you know, like the U.S. cavalry coming over the hill and saved everybody else. And so none of them could really believe in uncovering Allied evil. The myth was too strong the other way, that we were all good guys. And Canadians are perhaps a little bit more, suspicious of that. We're maybe more indifferent to that sort of thing. In any case, I agreed with the German that only a person not American or French or British could have done the book. And that was, I think, quite right.
Well, apparently it was. You know, others in this country have broached it. Others have tried to do it, but they were tainted, some of them, with bias or claimed to be coming from an ultra-right point of view or, you know, some sort of whack jobs, that type of thing. I remember Robert Welch, you know, who eventually would create the John Birch Society, wrote a book called Again, May God Forgive Us, after he wrote May God Forgive Us. And that's some of what he was talking about in his book. And, of course, he savaged Eisenhower in his other book, The Politician. And in that book, you know, he pretty much went through a litany of complaints about Eisenhower in the war and in public life when he returned. And Eisenhower ignored it because I guess it was so true. So what could he do about it? And unfortunately, this myth-making, as you say, is so powerful in American media, and more so now in the electronic media, in motion picture video productions, that it's pretty hard to get someone like you and other major historians to come out and say, you know, let's sit back a moment. There is no such thing as a purely good war. There were no
knights in shining armor. There were no white hats on the part of Eisenhower, the United States, Britain, and particularly, and most obviously, the Soviet Communist Criminal Empire. These are just absolute mythologies and total propaganda. This was the propaganda war, of course. So when you come out and you do that, that's amazing. Now, of course, some of your detractors immediately seized upon the book. And I guess, and I'm not being far-fetched when I say that some of the people who are criticizing your book initially, other losses, were Eisenhower apologists. But there are others who, for whatever reason, just felt that you had gone overboard, even though you document quite fastidiously all of what you've said.
Yes, you say, well, for whatever reason. That reason is the, I believe I've discovered it, and it's simply that everybody wants a good story that makes you feel better. And that's what the journalists are there to supply. They always are twisting everything around to look good and to praise your guys when our guys praise our guys. And nobody really cares about what's actually happening. And our guys are the ones who are protecting the myth now. But Eisenhower went out of his way to foster that myth himself. Mm. He, for instance, when he became chief of staff back in the States after the war, he ordered a whole lot of documents destroyed that would have revealed the death camps of the United States and France. He weeded the archives. Then when he became president, he did the same thing again. Yes. But on his way out of office, he did one remarkable thing. Having pronounced himself in favor of all kinds of warlike maneuvers and arming the French in Vietnam and so on, he warned Americans against the growing power of the military-industrial complex over and over again. He said that, and it's absolutely extraordinary that he would do that, because he helped to create it, and he profited from it.
Well, that's probably why he warned them, because he knew he was there, and, it's something that he was a proud part of. You know, he wrote the book.
Why did he change his mind, I wonder?
Well, I don't know if he did really change his mind that completely. Others have put another spin on it, and they have said things to the effect that Eisenhower basically wasn't saying exactly what people have interpreted it to mean. I think really he was actually, you could even say he was having a little chuckle at the fact that he knew what was coming with the Soviet Cold War and then eventually the collapse so-called of the Iron Curtain. I think he was actually too far in the know, Jim, and too much part of the equation to actually be revealing anything that urgent from his point of view. I don't think he was an honest man. I think he was a thoroughly corrupt and dishonest man. And I think more than anything, he was being a little bit flippant, boasting about something that was and that we would be powerless to do anything about. That makes more sense than him just saying, oh, I want to warn you about how this militarism and imperialism is going to envelop the United States in never-ending war. I don't really think he cared about people. I think Eisenhower cared about himself, and no question he had an ethnic bias against Germans. He did not like Germans. He himself was a Swedish Jew, I believe. That's what they said. And he definitely exhibited traits that apparently, as you know, angered General Patton to the point where he was going to spill the beans on Eisenhower and resign from the U.S. military. Of course, that was interdicted. All right. Our guest is James Back, and Jim and I will be back in just a few moments to discuss on this Veterans Day some history that we all need to know.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, folks. Hey, we're back now with our guest, Jim Back. And the book that we're talking about right now, going back to 1989, is Other Losses. And we'll get into his subsequent work as well. Jim, we're just talking about some of these critics, as well as what Eisenhower himself said. I was going to refer earlier to his own book, Crusade in Europe, quite a lengthy book. And it seems as if I never read the whole book, to be honest with you, but it seems as if he, particularly Eisenhower's, publishers and so forth, wanted to paint that image of him as being the knight in shining armor, you know, that he could do no wrong, and that what he was doing was fighting against tyranny and for freedom and liberation and all of that. And so I wondered, have you actually gone through that volume that he produced?
Oh, yeah. As soon as the war was over, I was reading all kinds of books, especially the ones by Eisenhower and Chester Wilmot and a couple of Canadian writers, Farley Mowat and Andrew McFarlane, very good writers, and it's a fascinating story, and so is Crusade in Europe by Eisenhower. But he was like Churchill in one respect. When somebody asked him, what do you think history is going to think about you and your campaign? And Eisenhower could have said, like Churchill, who did say, well, I think that history will be very kind to me because I intend to write it.
Yeah.
And he did. And he won the Nobel Prize for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Eisenhower was out to do with that Crusade in Europe volume of his.
Well, and then they would put him in, really, into the White House. Here he was a Democrat all of his life, and it goes to show you how parties mean nothing. And then they put him on a Republican platform, and then he becomes president in 1952.
Yeah, because they knew he would win.
Oh, yeah, and he carried the baggage, too. I mean, he as I said, there was nothing conservative or freedom-oriented, really, or Americanist-oriented about Eisenhower. His ideology was definitely left. I guess you could say he didn't find a communist that he didn't really like in Europe. And when he was president, I keep referring to the Hungarian uprising, you know, in 1956, which was the result of World War II. The fact that all those nations in Eastern and Central Europe that had been enslaved, liberated by Eisenhower, as he would say, then could seek freedom and rebellion against their tyrannical masters. And unfortunately, they were met with a deaf ear from Eisenhower.
There were several communists who were in the State Department who influenced Henry C. Morgenthau, who was the Secretary of the Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, Harry Dexter White and one other, were Lithuanians who were very sympathetic to the communist cause. And they organized a plan, which became the Morgenthau Plan, for murdering Germans after the war.
I know, yes.
And that's what Eisenhower was doing in those camps. I've got an interview on my film, which is available on my website, jamesback.com, that the American general who was in charge of one of these camps, he said that the camp was a shame and a crime, and it never should have happened, and that it was directly down to Henry C. Morgenthau and the Morgenthau Plan that Eisenhower was implementing.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. That was a very good interview, and this is from the American side as well. You know, let me ask you specifically, because of the book and subsequent works that you have done, give our audience a perspective on just what it is we're talking about, what it is we're talking about in these camps, these prisoner of war camps, and how they compared to the other side, okay? And just the German side, I know we hear a lot of things about, but what about the other side, our side, the Allied side? How bad were these prison camps, and were they the Germans deliberately singled out because they were German, as you just hinted with Morgenthau?
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
All right, well, we got the break right now again, so when we come back, we'll have about 20 minutes to talk uninterrupted. So you hold those questions, and we will come right back to Jim Back, who, of course, is an author of several books.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on, and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down, and, you know, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
All right, we're back, folks, on this Veterans Day and talking with James Back. And by the way, before he answers my questions, I want to mention his website again is www.jamesback.com. Now, Back is spelled B-A-C-Q-U-E. That's why I pronounced it Bach. Anyway, it's jamesback.com. Go there and look at the materials that you can avail yourselves of, purchase the DVDs, the other books that he has written, and as well, this other project that apparently is on the website too, this trailer for the film, Other Losses. But you could tell us about that in a few minutes, again. First, you can get into these camps, what made them so odious, and the comparisons.
Well, reason they were so odious was that they were planned that way. The British and the Canadians captured over 2 million Germans and Italians during the war, and their death rate in their camps was very, very small, way, way below what the death rate was in the French, the American, and the Soviet camps, mm-hmm. where it was just a slaughter in line with the Morgenthau plan.
Yes.
The camps were for the Americans, for the American camps, or the Germans, were just barbed wire enclosures with patrolled by men with machine guns with huge searchlights, and the only amenity they had was loudspeakers, and they would play mocking music at the Germans, such as, "Who's Sorry Now?" If you remember that old song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And enough Germans spoke English so they knew what was happening to them. These guys were starved to death, even though there was plenty of food, and they were exposed to the elements, to the rain, the snow, the sun, and the wind, without any shelter whatsoever for many, many months. And that's when the deaths started, right at the beginning in the spring, when the huge collapse of the German army began to occur. There were 5,224,310 prisoners in Western Europe, plus another million or so more in Italy, which the Americans had taken. And these guys just began to drop like flies. That it was deliberate, was they suspected right from the beginning, the prisoners did, because their ID was confiscated, their sold book, which is their German word for their ID book, their pay book, and so on. All of this was confiscated, and the men were just shuffling around, no tents, no nothing, not even a scrap of food for most of the time, not even water for a long time. Only the amount of rain that fell on them, which would, of course, give them pneumonia or tuberculosis or whatever, was what they had to drink. There were rivers flowing right nearby, and as soon as the British and the Canadians took over some of these American camps in order to distribute the load, the British and the Canadians were able to drill down into the earth for water and feed these poor, thirsty guys. The plan to do this was devised in England in a meeting between Eisenhower and Secretary of the Treasury, Henry C. Morgenthau, who came over just to convince Eisenhower to do this. Eisenhower was so convinced, he said to Morgenthau, "I will do this, and I will persuade the president myself if need be." And so soon after the Allies landed, which was in June of 1944, Churchill and Roosevelt came to Canada to have a meeting, and they did, at Quebec City, and there they discussed what to do with the Germans after the war, and Roosevelt, the president, presented on behalf of his government and the United States people the plan to kill millions of Germans, not just prisoners of war, but civilians as well after the war, and they initialed the plan, FDR and WSC. They initialed the plan, and for many, many months, it was official policy to murder Germans. Then this word, well, unfortunately, yes, it is incredible. I couldn't believe it when I began discovering this stuff, that our guys could have been so vicious. But they were persuaded by a vicious little man named Morgenthau and his vicious advisors, Harry Dexter White and a couple of others.
White was exposed as a Soviet agent in the Roosevelt administration.
That's right.
Now here's the question. What about the other plan and Morgenthau's plan to castrate German males?
Well, maybe that was the other guy called Kaufmann. There were several people.
Well, Morgenthau took credit for it as the Secretary of the Treasury there. And, so we've talked about that before, many times before. And, that was also in the works, wasn't it?
Well, there was another variation of that, which was Marshall, the George C. Marshall, the great general, who was the chief of staff of the Army at the time. He wrote a letter to Roosevelt in which he suggested that the way to deal with a German problem was to keep all the men of Germany in camps for as long as it took to prevent them from begetting any more children.
Right.
That would be another way of castrating them. And that was a letter which I read in the Roosevelt archives in New York State, near his old house at And that letter disappeared. I went back to see it a second time, and it was gone.
How did that happen?
Well, you know how it happens. They have layers in the archives of secrecy. The first layer is there's a book which lists all the papers and photographs that are available, and anybody can come see them. Then there's another book which lists those that are quite secret, but you can get permission to see them if you're the right guy, kind of guy. Then there's another book which lists documents and so forth which are secret, which only a very, very limited number of people, like the president and one or two assistants, can see. But there's yet another layer which nobody can find out about. And I've encountered that layer, which is photographs of the prisoners of war looking like the guys in Belsen and Auschwitz. And these are prisoners in American camps. They're starving to death, skin and bone.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you said something interesting, Jim. You said looked like prisoners in these other camps, these German-held camps in Poland. Weren't these some of these pictures used as such to, in other words, pose as those in the camps which the Germans were supposed to have run, and with the very same conditions and all of the horrible emaciated bodies, those pictures we see over and over again, weren't they the same ones in some cases?
I believe that happened, yes. It was falsification by photography.
Wow.
Or by archives, if you like. I believe that happened, yeah.
Wow. Also, let me get back to one other point, because then we'll take some calls. You mentioned the food supply being readily available to the Allies after the war. Now, we know during the war, you could make a case, obviously, food supplies, munitions, things were in short supply for the German army and also for others who were in the crossfire here. But what about after the war now? This is one of the criticisms, of course, that would come against your book, Other Losses. One particularly would say that, well, no, it wasn't that bad. They had food shortages amongst the Allies, too, and therefore they just couldn't find enough for the German prisoners of war. What about that now? Be specific.
That's a complete fiction. That's okay. Part of the only good war myth. There were more. There was more wheat produced in 1945 than the world had ever produced before. There were almost as many potatoes, and there was just as much rye and other grains and rice as there ever had been.
Mm-hmm.
The food supply was, just like today, adequate to feed the whole earth, but a lot of people starved because of vicious politics. That's the way it still is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've seen that in the 80s with the Iran-Iraq war and what followed, and the starvation, deliberate starvation and poisoning of innocents in those wars under Bush and his son. So, I mean, there's nothing new under the sun, as we can see now. I want to take a couple of calls for you, but go ahead. Say something else that you had in mind.
Well, the plan was a big success, and it, as far as the Allies were concerned, but the Germans are a very resilient people, and they accepted their re-education, and they went to work. And within 20 years, the reason that the war had been fought, which was to save the markets of the British and the French and to drive the Germans away from competition with them, was completely lost. The Germans were once again the richest people in Europe, and they had huge debts to pay, and they were richer than the French and the British, simply because they worked so hard and so successfully.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting stuff, you know, and you see the brother against brother war, if you will, right out of the scriptures. You see the Brits and the Germans and the French, and all really European brothers, if I can put it in a secular sense.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's a very good way to put it.
And you had the gangster criminals at the top financing these wars. The House of Rothschild, you know, definitely made it unavoidable for them to
create. You're
making
me laugh too hard when you say gangster. That's great.
Well, as you said, the what did you refer to it as? The Empire of Britain. And the empire was extended all over the world in India and elsewhere, creating problems in Africa, South Africa, and South America. And then, as Pat Buchanan said, I guess in his book, The Unnecessary War, he talked about handing the torch of the empire over to America so America could be bled to death. And boy, that's where we are today, you know? So, but, you know, the brother against brother thing, it really goes back to biblical times. And, you know, we're seeing the house and the split, you know, in Israel, ancient Israel I'm talking about now, and what they were doing to each other, killing each other, waging war, the kings against the kings. And there they are, these nice little gangsters again, holding the money bag and saying, now we're going to give you the arms. But don't use them. In case you need them, here they are. You know, yeah. In case you need the weapons.
Well, of course, and you poor Americans, you went through the same thing yourself with the U.S. Civil War. And your revolution was really at the start of it, just another civil war.
Really? You're right. You're very, you're getting quite perceptive here, Jim. Thank you for that. And now, let me take some calls because of time today. We only have 2 hours, and Art's going to be coming on in the last hour, so but not at the beginning of the hour. We'll give you a little more time, okay? I want to bring up a couple of callers. Our number is 800-313-9443. If you have a question for our guest and a comment, again, 800-313-9443. I guess Mark is up here now from Georgia. Hello, Mark. You're on with Jim Bauer.
There we go. Hey, can you hear me okay?
There's a little bit of an echo, but we can hear you. Speak right into your phone.
Okay, I'm using a hands-free.
Come on up a little louder.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
That's much better. Much better.
Oh, okay. I have been preparing a rebuttal. One thing I think that you'd be interested in, and I'm just looking for co-laborers to update War is a Racket by Major General Smedley Butler. What he wrote back in 33, spot on, but the problem is we need to update it for what's happened since then. And that's like the thing I try to get across to when I see people who have anything, whether they're a military uniform or, you know, like veterans wear hats, like, you know, members of, you know, that they were on this, that, the other ship, whatever. I say, remember your oath, all enemies, foreign, and I kind of do this little, you know, blank, you know, fill in the blank thing here when I'm speaking to them face to face. And they go, oh, domestic. Yes, all enemies, foreign and domestic. And the thing is about updating this pamphlet is we need to be clear that there's the official account on one side and then there's reality on the other. And the thing, I think, the first thing about coming clean is like when God asked Adam, did you eat of the tree I told you not to? God knew what happened. God wasn't asking for information. He was affording Adam the opportunity to come clean. And Eve didn't, you know, he said, yes, but, you know, and it said, but there was a problem. Instead of saying, yes, I did, sorry, he said, the woman you gave me, as though it's her fault, and it's your fault for giving her to me. And, you know, the woman asked, you know, he asked the woman, the serpent beguiled me. Well, that's true, but it's also true that you lit him. And God asked Cain, where's your brother Abel? Again, God's not looking for information. He's like, I already know the truth. I'm just waiting for you to come clean. And you know, and that's the point is, the first thing about coming clean is know that God already knows. Whatever the reality is, God's already there. And he's either waiting with mercy and forgiveness, or he's waiting with condemnation of, you had the opportunity to come clean. You're more concerned about what other people who share a common delusion.
Yeah, I do that.
You're more concerned about, it's like our entire political system.
All right, hang on a little bit, Mark. Yeah. Mark.
Stand by.
Mark, yes, okay, let Jim respond, please. Yes.
Yeah, okay, well, go on ahead.
You're quite right. I have my own experience. I blame my wife all the time.
Yes.
And now she's starting to blame me.
Yes.
Got a good sense of humor there. All right. Okay, so Mark, what's the bottom line here now? What exactly would you like to have us perceive here as far as this whole subject of the wars and veterans of war as a racket is concerned?
I'm saying that America needs to come clean, that American deceptionalism is more accurately called American exceptionalism. I call it American deceptionalism because it's better to be humbled by the truth than to be proud of lie. And the thing that people say, I'm so proud of my military service, is like, what if the real danger to us is not this foreign boogeyman, but like the founder said, this is why I'm a classical liberal. I agree with the founder. That makes me, anyway, you want me to stand by?
Right.
Well, I think you've summed it up pretty well, actually, and I think the point is well taken. You're right. You made a good point. We have other callers. We're going to have to go into the next hour. Thank you, though, Mark, for your call. And Jim, you stay right with yourself. You stand by, all righty? Thank you.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams is on. Ouch.
And thank you very much. All right, we're back. Hour number two with Jim and... Again, the book we're discussing that he wrote a number of years ago, 1989, that was published then, Other Losses. Subsequent, of course, to that, he had a new book, which we'll get into as well a little bit later as we wind down the show. But I did want to take our next call, and that is Joe from Rhode Island. Hello, Joseph.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi.
Come on up. You're on.
Okay, Rick. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Okay. James, thank you for being there.
You're
a wealth of knowledge.
Thank you.
James Michael Bordeaux, in his book, The Opium of the People, Communism in the USSR, he was an Anglican priest who was sent to Russia after the wars to investigate just how many deaths, things that happened in Russia over that 71-year period of communism. From my readings from him and my computations and other studies and other people I've talked to, I've come up with a figure of 120 million Christians, many of whom are buried in mass graves with lime poured over their bodies for disintegration of the bones. 120 million Christians. Now, could you possibly give me a figure in the other countries during World War I and World War II of the number of Christians that were killed, let's say, in France, Italy, the European nations as a whole, Poland? Could you give me a figure, a rough figure on that, so I could add that to the total of 120 in Russia?
Well, no, I couldn't break it down for you, except to say that the Germans that were murdered in Western Germany, in the areas controlled by the United States, Britain, and France after the war, approximately 14 million people died as a result of the policies under the Morgenthau plan and the Stalin plan in the Russian zone of Germany. So around 13 to 14 million were dead, and they were nearly all Christian or post-Christian, you know. When you've been through a war like that, maybe you found it pretty hard to be a Christian. I don't know. I couldn't speak to that. But nominally Christian Germans died in the number of maybe 14 million, including the prisoners of war.
Okay. Now, does that include Italy, too?
No. I couldn't speak.
I know in Italy, my father's town, which was a very small town, was a mountaintop town.
Stay with us, Joe. We're going to officially open up our number two, and you stay on the line to relate that story, because folks, it's getting hotter and hotter in the kitchen right now, and we want to take a midway break and return with our guest Jim. Stay tuned. Rick Adams Uncensored.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you, so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.